I will see you off now down the back of the ridge. There's just something that I've got to show you. There is Domer and his ride in the common case. It ain't nothing that you say is true.
With your long arms trap and just give some time. Presently it does include my dues. Ain't you stand a premonition?
Tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
K282BH Philomer on 104.3 FM.
And K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
And streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Volunteer-powered community radio.
KBOO.
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 The flowers are blooming, the birds are singing, and KBOO's spring membership drive is back. If you enjoy alternative radio that pushes the status quo, then support KBOO by becoming a member today. Donate online at bit.ly/KBOO or text KBOO to 44321 between now and May 25th and support Avant-Garde Airways.
Are you eloquent, an elephant? Can you converse in chimpanzee? Have a heart-to-heart in horse or chat with a cow? Me neither, but we can definitely speak for them. Hi, I'm Michelle Coppola, inviting you to join me every fourth Friday of the month at 10 a.m. for Voices for the Animals, where we give a voice to the issues, concerns, and welfare of the other non-human creatures on the planet. Until we can have in-depth discussions in dolphin or yak, well, in yak, it's a great way to learn about how we can make this a more humane world. Voices for the Animals, every fourth Friday of the month at 10 a.m., only here on KBOO.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Before we get started, a reminder that KBOO's membership drive is going on now. KBOO is commercial-free, volunteer-powered radio made possible by people like you and me. You can help us reach our fundraising goal today. Please go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO at 44321. And thank you very much. We appreciate your support. All around us these days, people are looking at their phones too much, eating too much, drinking too much. Our world is addicted to fleeting, distracting pleasures that get us nowhere. We're living in a time of unprecedented access to high reward, high dopamine stimuli. Drugs, food, news, gambling, shopping, gaming, texting, sexting, Facebooking, Instagramming, YouTubing, tweeting. The increased numbers, variety, and potency is staggering, and we have all become vulnerable to compulsive overconsumption. Why is this a problem? We're going to examine this today with our guest, Dr. Anna Lemke, author of the new book, Dopamine Nation, Finding Balance in the Age of Indulgence. Anna is the medical director of Stanford Addiction Medicine, program director for the Stanford Addiction Medicine Fellowship, and chief of the Stanford Addiction Medicine Clinic. She is the recipient of numerous awards for outstanding research in mental illness for excellence in teaching and for clinical innovation and treatment. A clinician scholar, she has published more than 100 peer-reviewed papers, book chapters, and commentaries in prestigious outlets such as the New England Journal of Medicine and JAMA. She sits on the board of several state and national addiction-focused organizations, has testified before various committees in the United States House of Representatives and Senate, keeps an active speaking calendar, and maintains a thriving clinical practice. How does she do it? Maybe we'll find out a little about that too. Hello, Anna, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
Hello, Paul. Thank you for having me.
Now, it seems to me that insofar as motivation is concerned, dopamine's a good thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. We need dopamine. It's not an evil chemical at all. It's what gets us off the couch and gets us doing the things we need to do to get the rewards that we want. It's a really important chemical signal.
And I've heard it described as the pleasure molecule, but that's not exactly accurate, is it?
Not entirely. It is essential to the experience of pleasure and reward. It's not the only chemical in our brain that's involved in that process, but it's probably the final common pathway for all reinforcing drugs and behaviors. But it's also really important for motivation, and it's also important for novelty. It's a signal in our brain that we need to pay attention to things in the environment. One of the classic experiments is scientists took a rat and engineered it so it would have no dopamine at all. And what they discovered was if they put food in the rat's mouth, it would swallow the food and seem to enjoy it. But if they put the food even a single body length away, the rat would starve to death. It couldn't be bothered to get up and go get the food. So that tells us that dopamine is really important, not just for pleasure in the moment, but also for motivation to get us to go get that pleasure.
Okay, so it's the neurotransmitter that makes us desire things, right?
Yeah, that's a fair summary.
Now, what's the sense of your title, Dopamine Nation? I mean, why nation? Is it more of a problem here in America?
You know, I think if I were to edit the title slightly, I might even call it Dopamine Nations, plural, because this is not just a problem in the United States. It's actually a problem the world over, especially in wealthy economies. The reason that I call the book Dopamine Nation is because I'm trying to communicate that we've really reached an unprecedented moment in our history when, for the first time in human history, we have more access to more reinforcing substances and behaviors than ever before. And that access is 24/7, literally at the touch of a smartphone finger. We can order almost anything we want. We're constantly having the opportunity to essentially distract ourselves or titillate ourselves in one way or another. And this is really unprecedented in human history. For most of humanity, people have lived in a world of scarcity and ever-present danger. The famous quote, life is nasty, brutish, and short, has actually been true for most of human history until about 200 years ago, when the Industrial Revolution, science and technology allowed for really a massive change in our environment. We invented machines that took over much of our labor. We now have more leisure time than ever before. Approximately in the United States, we average 4 to 5 hours of leisure time per day. In 2040, we're predicted to average 7 to 8 hours of leisure time per day. Not only do we have more time on any given day, we have more days in any given life. We used to live on average to age 30. Now we live on average to age 80 plus. And what we're doing with all of this amazing extra time is distracting ourselves. You know, we're engaging in the use of reinforcing drugs and behaviors, including drugs that didn't even exist before. And the result is that we've all become more vulnerable to the problem of addiction.
Now, I mean, some people would argue, well, this great abundance that we have, this is called the good life, right? I mean, more pleasure.
Yeah.
What's wrong with more pleasure?
It's the perfect question to ask. And you would think of, on the face of it, like what could be wrong? But if you understand how our brains process pleasure and pain, you will realize that there's this incredible mismatch between our ancient neurological wiring and our modern ecosystem. We were not evolved for a world of abundance. And so all of this pleasure is effectively resetting our pleasure pain threshold, making us more vulnerable to pain. That is, even the slightest pain is painful to us now. And we need more and more pleasure to feel any kind of pleasure at all. So we've essentially changed our hedonic or joy set point.
Our entire economy is sort of built around this, right? I mean, around consumerism. I mean, what did David Court write? He calls it limbic capitalism.
Yes, right. That wonderful quote from David Court, right? Yeah, it's definitely the dark side of capitalism, right? There's this, you know, Descartes' famous quote is, I think, therefore I am today. I consume, therefore I am. Wow. We really, that's sort of our reason for living now. You know, on any given weekend afternoon, you know, Americans shop. On the face of it, it might seem benign, but the result is not just, you know, the sort of resetting of our own pleasure pain pathway so that we're getting into what I call a dopamine deficit state, which is really akin to clinical depression as a result of all of this overconsumption. But we're also, you know, destroying our planet. All of this consumption leads to depletion of our forests, our fuel sources, our fisheries. So there are lots of good reasons related to our own health, to our planet's health, to really look hard at, you know, the national pastime, which is consumption.
Is there any sense to the phrase dopamine addiction? I mean, are we addicted to dopamine itself, or does dopamine just know no satisfaction? It doesn't know any satisfaction, so therefore it propels us to become addicted to other things.
Yeah, so I think, you know, to say dopamine addiction is a little bit of a misnomer. It doesn't quite capture it because dopamine is this signal that goes up and it goes down. First of all, we're always firing dopamine at a baseline rate in our brains. And it's that deviation from baseline, which is the important signal. So when we do something pleasurable, there's an increase in dopamine. Things that are highly addictive release dopamine a lot faster and a lot more dopamine all at once. But what happens in our brains as soon as we release dopamine and experience pleasure is that our brains adapt to that increased dopamine by downregulating our own dopamine production and transmission, not just to those baseline levels, but actually below baseline, putting us in this dopamine deficit state. And of course, that's the state of withdrawal, craving, that's the hangover, the after effect, that wanting one more piece of chocolate or one more episode of our Netflix series or one more cigarette. Now, if we wait for just a moment, that craving will typically pass and our dopamine firing will go back to baseline levels. But what happens in the brain is people become addicted, and I would venture to say that we're all a little bit addicted to something, is that with repeated exposure to the same or similar stimulus, that initial dopamine firing gets weaker and shorter, but that after effect, that dopamine deficit state, gets stronger and longer. And ultimately, we essentially end up in a chronic dopamine deficit state, which again is akin to like a depression or an anxiety state. The universal symptoms of withdrawal from any addictive substance are anxiety, irritability, insomnia, dysphoria, and craving. And once we've entered that chronic dopamine deficit state, then we need our drug not to get high, but just to feel normal. And when we're not using, we are in this state of craving, the state of anxiety, the state of withdrawal, which is exactly why people with severe addiction will relapse even weeks and months after they've stopped using. It's because they're walking around in a dopamine deficit state, right? They're not walking around with, you know, a pleasure pain balance in the neutral or homeostatic position.
Well, I do want to touch on how do we remedy that once it's become an addictive problem like that. But before we do, I'm just curious, what is a healthy relationship to dopamine look like? What is that when you're at the baseline, or, you know, are you okay? So you have a desire for something, you fulfill that desire. What's the healthy pattern
Yeah, I think I use this in the book. I use this extended metaphor of a pleasure pain balance. It's like a board on a fulcrum, and when that balance is at rest, that is at baseline dopamine firing levels, then it's parallel to the ground. And a healthy kind of pleasure pain balance or dopamine set point is really a supple balance. That means it can respond to pleasurable stimuli. So it tilts one way for pleasure, the other way for pain. And it can tilt easily to the pleasure side and also to the pain side, but it very quickly restores homeostasis. So it's able to return quickly and easily back to baseline so that the individual can remain in this place of being able to notice modest rewards and respond to, you know, painful stimuli in a way that's sort of supple and flexible with this return to baseline. What we don't want to get into is where we're bombarding the pleasure side of that balance with so many rewards that we end up with the balance trying to compensate. I call them these neuroadaptation gremlins that hop on the pain side of the balance to sort of counteract that initial pleasure, and they end up camping out there. And then we have a balance that's chronically tilted to the side of pain. That's the addicted brain. That's where we get into that state where now we need to use just to feel normal. So you don't want to get into that state. You want to, if you're going to indulge in intoxicants of any sort, you want to make sure that they're not too potent. So they don't want to tip the balance too far and too fast and release too much dopamine at once. And you want to make sure that you leave enough time in between for the balance to restore its level position or homeostasis. You don't want to be using every single day, for example, such that now your brain's trying to compensate by ultimately readjusting to the side of pain. Does that make sense?
So you talk about substances, and that's an easy thing for us to understand the downside of, because of the hangover effect or withdrawals, et cetera, and the pain that comes with that. But there's a lot of other things that we might enjoy. Like somebody might be, you know, addicted to playing video games or Instagram or getting likes, on their social media. And it's kind of, you know, of course you get that and you go, oh yeah, I want more of that. You know,
yeah.
It's like you can never get enough. And then you get addicted to that. What's the downside of that? Because it's not going to be a physical withdrawal symptom.
Well, you know, actually it is. So it might be a more subtle physical withdrawal, but even if there's no physical withdrawal, there's the psychological withdrawal. Remember, the universal symptoms of withdrawal from any addictive substance are anxiety, irritability, insomnia, dysphoria, and craving. Let me give you an example. I have many, many patients who come into my office wanting help for depression, anxiety, insomnia, poor concentration. And many of these individuals are using some kind of addictive substance or behavior on a regular basis. They're smoking pot, they're drinking alcohol, they're playing many hours of video games, they're on their smartphone doing social media for many hours per day. They're shopping, they're gambling, they're doing some combination of all of that. And what I say to them is, in order to make you feel better, the first thing I want you to do is eliminate that substance or behavior from your life for 1 month. They say to me, why would I do that? It's the only thing that gives me any relief from my anxiety and depression. And I say to them, well, I appreciate that it may feel in the moment that it's giving you relief, but actually it's probably the cause of your anxiety and depression. Because by repeatedly bombarding your reward pathway with that highly reinforcing drug and behavior, what you're essentially telling your brain to do is to downregulate production of your own endogenous dopamine and other feel-good neurotransmitters and hormones, because you're getting it all from this substance. So your brain doesn't need to make its own. And as a result, you have now tipped your pleasure-pain balance into this, basically tipped it chronically to the pain side. You're in a dopamine deficit state, which is pretty much the same as being depressed. And if you can just stop using that drug or behavior for a period of time, your brain will readapt. You'll start to upregulate your own dopamine production, and you'll feel a heck of a lot better with our having not to do anything else. I don't have to prescribe a pill. You don't have to do talk therapy. You know, patients are very skeptical of this because Our world is sensory rich and causal poor. It feels in the moment like those behaviors are a relief from our angst, from our despair, from our distress. But actually what's happening is they're changing our brain to make us feel that way in the first place. And this is happening not just on an individual level, but really on the level of nations. If you look at rates of anxiety, depression, and suicide, they're going up all over the world. They've increased in the past 30 to 50 years, especially in rich nations. If you look at rates of addiction, they're highest in rich nations. Why is that? Because we're all constantly bombarding our reward pathways and resetting our hedonic set point to the side of pain. So when patients are willing to do this, and also if they're able to, obviously there are some clinical circumstances where I wouldn't recommend this, like the patient has tried multiple times to stop on their own and they can't, or if they were to stop alcohol, they're very physiologic dependent, they could go into a life-threatening withdrawal. So clearly there are cases where I wouldn't do this, but in 80% of my patients who are able to do this challenge, they will come back a month later and say, I feel less depressed and anxious than I have in years. It is amazing how much better people feel when they cut out their drug of choice for 30 days. The first 2 weeks are horrible because then they're in that dopamine deficit state. But if they can just wait that out and the gremlins hop off and the brain is plastic enough to restore baseline dopamine firing, people feel much, much better just by eliminating pleasure.
That is so counterintuitive and
yep.
Really profound. And it's got to be hard to, so you're a clinical psychiatrist. Still, it's got to be hard for you to be able to persuade people to do that, because that takes a lot of willpower.
The reason I can really sell it is because I've seen it work again and again and again. Every single clinic day, there's a patient who's abstained from whatever their drug is, pornography, video games, cannabis, cocaine. They come back and they say, I feel so much better. And then the question really is, okay, what next? Continue to abstain or go back to using in moderation? I meet patients wherever they are, but after that experiment, I don't have to persuade people anymore of the value of changing their habit, because now they've seen how much better they feel not using. Now they're motivated. So yes, the initial persuasion is the hump, but I can sell it because I just really know it works. And also because I don't pretend like it's easy. I say to patients, you know what? This may be the battle of your lifetime. This is going to be really, really hard, but you have to believe me. If you can make it through these 30 days, it may effectively change your life.
Dopamine detox. There's a lot of YouTube videos on it. And a lot of people, recommending fairly extreme deprivation. It's hard to imagine that people are watching that video and they're quite able to do it. But, okay, so what would life be like? Let's say somebody, dial forward 50 years, nobody has to work anymore. You've got so much leisure time, it's not even funny. The robots are doing all the boring and dangerous jobs.
Yeah, that's so right. That's where we're headed.
That is where we're headed. We're never going to have full employment. So what is life going to be like? What are people going to be doing then? Is everybody going to be writing the great American novel, or are people just going to be sitting around watching TV? It's just kind of hard to imagine. And what's your vision of the future in a positive way? As we go down this route.
Yeah. Well, I would say that my main reason for writing Dopamine Nation is because I want to have a positive vision of the future. I want people to be working on the great American novel, or even the not very great American novel, but some kind of creative endeavor. My concern is that the way that we're headed now is that we are using our disposable income and our leisure time, and even our other time that's not technically leisure time, to distract ourselves, to buy, to have sex, to play games, to eat, to smoke, to drink. And I, you know, it's concerning. So I want people to wake up to the fact that almost everything in our modern ecosystem has become drugified. We've all become vulnerable to this problem of addiction. We can get sucked into it without even being aware that we're in it, and that we need to really pay attention and be vigilant and change our lives in a world where, you know, we're really saturated in dopamine drugs.
So what are people going to do? Are we going to meditate all day long? Is everybody going to jump on the spiritual path? And
well, those are good things. I mean, those are good things, maybe. You know, there's when I think about like the destruction that we're doing to the planet, I think there are actually a lot of things out there we could be doing to try to save the planet. You know, that would be sort of one very, very big job. Just even going around and picking up garbage, right, would be something. And there are a lot of things that we can do. You know, as I talk about in the book, there's sort of basically three basic ways that people can get into recovery from whatever their drug of choice is, or three steps, let me say. The first is the 30-day fast from the drug of choice. And when I talk about a dopamine fast, unlike those YouTube videos that you're mentioning, I'm not talking about going and living in a dark cave for 30 days and having no sensory input. I'm talking about choosing that thing in your life that you have that conflicted relationship with, that you wish you did less of, right, and that you know is causing some harm in some dimensions of your life. Eliminate that for 30 days, but also do things that are hard, right? Because the truth is when we press on the pain side of the balance, that causes those neuroadaptation gremlins to hop on the pleasure side and actually resets us in the direction of pleasure. So by doing things that are physically painful, like exercise or ice cold water baths, psychologically painful, or just you know, mild to moderate noxious stimuli like intermittent fasting. So I'm not proposing necessarily what people are going to do with their leisure time, but I know for sure that we have to stop consuming at the rate that we are consuming, or we are going to die and kill our planet. 70% of the world's deaths are attributable to diseases caused by modifiable risk factors. And the top three are smoking, diet, and lack of physical activity.
Wow. I love the way that you point out the paradox that hedonism actually leads to its opposite, which is the inability to experience or enjoy pleasure of any kind. And that is so interesting, that we need to find a balance between pleasure and pain. And you write, pursuing pain instead of pleasure is countercultural, going against all the feel-good messages that pervade so many aspects of modern life. Buddha taught finding the middle way between pain and pleasure, but even the middle way has been adulterated by what you call the tyranny of convenience. Hence, we must seek out pain and invite it into our lives. That is such an interesting message for Americans and for consumers all over the world.
Yeah. And, you know, when I talk about inviting pain into our lives, at this point, that means for a lot of people just turning off their smartphones for 24 hours and not looking at it. You know, that's actually painful. People go into withdrawal if they have to do that, or just getting up off the couch and walking around in your neighborhood. I mean, I see a lot of, you know, patients who are plugged in all day long, don't move their bodies, and are really very, very unhappy as a result. So, you know, when I'm talking about pain, I'm not necessarily talking about climbing Mount Everest. That might be what some people need to do, but there are more and more people around the globe who really just need to, like, you know, go on a walk.
Or be of service somehow, you know?
Yeah.
Right. You point out, there's so many problems that we could spend our time and energy and money addressing, yes, for the sake of the product, planet, for the sake of doing good. Anna, there's so much more we could explore. I loved your book. I'm so happy that we could have you on Pathways today, but we've run out of time. I want to make sure to tell our listeners about your website, which is entitled dopaminenation.com. I'm going to encourage all the listeners today to go to dopaminenation.com and also to buy your book. I mean, it's really a good read. I mean, for somebody who's a scientist, you're a pretty good writer, and I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you. So I appreciate
again,
it.
Thanks again for being with us.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
And for all those who may have tuned into Pathways late today, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of Intuitive Intelligence, a book that shares the theme of Pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. And don't worry, you can play or share this interview with Anna Lemke whenever you want via the internet or free podcast. And I'll tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Dr. Anna Lemke, author of Dopamine Nation, Finding Balance in the Age of Indulgence. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed on the internet at www.kboo.fm every other Sunday morning at 8:30 USA Pacific time. Even better, podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. That's spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes, Paulo's YouTube channel, and other free podcast servers. KBOO's membership drive is going on now. KBOO is commercial-free, volunteer-powered radio made possible by people like you and me. You can help us reach our fundraising goal today. Please go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO at 44321. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and Podcast. And thanks again to Dr. Anna Lemke and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open.